Dr. Gautier was in a sweat to be off, so in the end Rudy cursed and grinned and let me keep them. He knew I wouldn't be fool enough to make a bolt for it now. With de Gautier leading, Rudy and I behind, and two of the others in the rear, we struck out through the trees, plodding ankle-deep through the snow. It was still as death, all round, and hellish dark, but de Gautier led on unerringly for perhaps a quarter of an hour, and we came to a high stone wall running across our front. There was a wicket, and then we were skirting past a thicket of high bushes, which, by their regular spacing, must be in a garden of some great estate. Even in the darkness I could make out the level sweep of lawn under the snow, and then ahead of us were the blazing lights of a huge mansion, surrounded by terraces and hedged about by avenues of clipped bushes. De Gautier strode noiselessly up one of these, with us hard on his heels. There were stone steps rising to a wing of the house that seemed to be in darkness, and then we were clustered round a small doorway under a great stone lintel, and Rudy was softly whistling, of all things, Marbre s'en va ton guerre. For a few seconds we waited, breathing hoarsely like schoolboys who have robbed an orchard, and then the door opened. Dichard! De Gautier went in and we followed. There was a man in a frock coat in the dimly lit passage. He closed the door quickly behind us. The other two were still outside somewhere, and motioned us to silence. He was a tall, distinguished old file, with a beaky nose and heavy lower lips. He had grey hair and a beard like a muffler round his jawline. He glanced keenly at me, muttered, "Donna," and turned to Rudy. "A complication. His Highness has retired early. He is already in his apartments." "Aha," thinks I. "Clever little Bismarck's bandobast didn't allow for this. Oh, Jesus, we're done for." "No matter," says Rudy easily. "He has three rooms. He can't be in all of them at once." This was gibberish to me, but it seemed to reassure Deschard. Without another word, he led us along the passage, up a stair, into a well-lighted and carpeted corridor, and round a corner to a large double door. He paused, listening, cautiously turned the handle, and peered in. A moment later, we were all inside. Deschard stood for a moment, and I could hear my heart thumping like a paddle wheel. The sound of voices came softly through an adjoining door from the next room.
"His Highness is in his bedchamber," whispers Deschard.
Rudy nodded. "Strip," says he to me, and de Gautier bundled up my gear as I tore it off. He knotted it all in my cloak. I had just sense enough to remember my pistols and thrust them hurriedly under a cushion. And then I was standing there, mother naked, while Deschard listened with his ear to the panels of the communicating door.
"Lucky little Duchess Irma," murmurs Rudy, and I saw him grinning at me. "Let's hope the real prince is as royally endowed."
He tipped me a mock salute, very debonair.
"Bonne chance, your Highness. Ready, de Gautier?"